I'm Tony Hendra.
And I'm Jeff Kreisler.
And this is the Final Edition Radio Hour.
30 minutes of sizzling satire with teeth.
My fellow Americans, I'm coming to you from America's bloodstream to update you on Obamacare, or as some call it here in the economic nervous system, Obama can't. I'm here neutralizing hostile objects such as viruses, bacteria, and Tea Party Republicans, as well as defected Democrats. Remember, the plan hasn't changed. If you're happy with the two-party system, you get to keep it. If you're not happy, you're still forced to buy into it because corporate ownership of democracy is a pre-existing condition. If you can't get on the website, don't worry. We've got all your info over at the NSA. Thank you, and God bless the United Prostates of America.
We just checked the headlines, and it looks like it's time for episode 2 of Oh That George, starring George Zimmerman, the lovable little scamp who gets into all kinds of trouble, but never gets in trouble. Well, it looks like old George is having lady troubles again. Let's drop by the local police station where he's hanging out with his old friend, Officer Tom.
All right, George. Now, did you smash all those things in your girlfriend's apartment, or did she?
Oh, let's just say things were smashed. I tell you, Officer Tom, I'll just never understand women. First, my girl tells me to leave her house. Then she gets mad when I start packing, so I tell her to leave.
Well, then you pointed a gun in her face.
That's what she said.
Well, George, America can't stay mad at you. You're free to go.
Thanks, Officer Tom.
And don't forget your guns.
All right, first you tell me to leave, now you're stalling me over the guns. You're going psycho on me, Tom. You're out of control. You've got to get out of here.
I've got a what?
Get out, Tom, now!
But you're kicking me out of my own police station.
Later, George goes to stay with his old pal, Sean Hannity. Sean always understands.
Buck up, George. Everyone knows you're the real victim. You're always the real victim.
But geez, Sean, how am I ever gonna work things out with the ladies?
Relax. Why, it just so happens I've got Carol from downstairs dropping by for dinner. There she is now. Hey, Carol, this is my friend George.
Hi, I'm George. May I take your coat? You can just hang them on my gun. I use it for everything.
How resourceful.
George, you shot a hole in her coat.
It had a knife.
Later that evening...
You know, George, I'm glad Sean left us alone. I think I've been waiting my whole life for a guy like you.
Gosh, do you mean it?
Yeah. You know, I've been in a lot of abusive relationships in my life. One right after another. Over and over. Every single time. But I know this is going to be different. My instincts are never wrong. Except whenever I get into the abusive relationships.
That sounds great, Carol. I just have one question. It's the middle of the night. What are you doing in Sean Hannity's apartment?
Breaking news from the United States Congress. House Oversight Committee Chairman Daryl Issa now has a witness who says President Barack Obama was, in fact, one of the people who attacked the U.S. Embassy in Benghazi. Let's go live to Capitol Hill for that testimony.
So, Mr. Doe, you're saying you saw President Obama fire a mortar at the embassy?
Yes. I remember thinking, hey, that looks like the president. And I was going to go talk to him, but he was talking to his famous friends Jay-Z and Beyonce and Barbra Streisand, who also had rocket launchers.
Excuse me, Mr. Doe, I have your Facebook feed from the time during the Benghazi attack, and at the moment the embassy came under siege, someone posted a picture of you singing Detroit Rock City at a karaoke bar in Michigan.
Congresswoman, what's your point?
My point, Representative Issa, is that your witness could not possibly have been in Benghazi during the attack.
And what's your point?
Okay, that testimony is rather suspect, and we apologize for cutting to it, but we will return as soon as ICE's investigation turns up any information on the president. In the meantime, let's go to our financial segment. Wait, hold on. We've just received word that Congressman Issa has physical evidence regarding President Obama and Benghazi. Let's go to Capitol Hill.
And this letter states that President Obama aimed an anti-gravity beam at the embassy, and as a result of warp effects in the space-time continuum, shockwaves went back in time and killed beloved puppeteer Jim Henson.
Congressman Issa, who wrote this letter?
I did.
Unfortunately, that evidence was not at all what we were led to expect. But rest assured, in the future, we will only provide coverage for Congressman Issa when we are absolutely, completely certain he has real evidence, which he does right now. We go back to Capitol Hill.
This is a picture of Barack Obama's head on a dinosaur's body with three Benghazi victims in his mouth. As you can see in the background is ancient Rome, which is why he could attack Benghazi or cover up Benghazi or cover up his response to Benghazi while he was simultaneously filmed at the White House responding to Benghazi.
Interesting. And you did all this using only blue acrylics?
I'm kind of in my blue period, yes.
So there you have it, from Daryl Issa, investigating the White House response to Benghazi. For those who just tuned in, the highlights are Barack Obama's head on a dinosaur body, three Benghazi victims in his mouth, in ancient Rome. We will cut back to these hearings as they develop.
It's time for the final edition Radio Hour's finance feature, Money or Die. We're most fortunate to have with us tonight the Prime Minister of Bribeira in Eastern Europe, reputedly the most corrupt country in the world. Strong Powers has the story.
Prime Minister Bakshish, your country has been rated number one on the planet for kicking back, paying off, greasing the skids.
Or my palm.
Getting a taste.
Or a bite. There are so many fun words for kickback. Our cops will arrest you unless you give them enough for a soda, which equals a couple $100.
To wash down the taste or bite.
Exactly. We are so proud of our number one rating, we changed our name to Bribeira to celebrate this happy state of affairs.
What was it before?
Catatonia. And back when we were part of the Austro-Hungarian Empire, Bulimia.
So what brings you to these shores, Dr. Bakshish?
We have been studying your amazing system of bribery to see if we can make improvements on our own.
But you already are number one in the world.
Only number one among 187 nations on the planet that admit to pervasive bribery. America is not one of them. But your system of bribery is far, far in advance of ours in its sophistication and its sophistry.
Are you suggesting that not only is the United States riddled with corruption, but hides it behind euphemism?
Euphemism, schmoofemism. How about legality? I have just returned from several days on K Street in Washington, D.C. There, I met scores of people who we in Bribeira call bagmen or bagwomen. Amazing! But unlike Bribeira, where a bagman for, say, a car manufacturer would skulk around at night and eat in greasy spoons and leave the bribe in a filthy railroad men's room, the Auto Association of America's lobbyist walks into the senator's office and openly pays him a huge bribe to vote no on a bill that will save thousands of lives. And reporters take photos of him taking the bribe, and they call the bribe a campaign contribution. Brilliant! We are going to adopt this wonderful scam right away.
You don't have lobbyists in Bribeira?
Oh, no. We have bagmen galore, dirty, filthy, untrustworthy scum, accessories to crimes against the people.
A necessary evil, surely.
Oh, yes, but we would never have these rat bags in our homes or official functions. If they show themselves on the street, we kick them in their private parts until they fall into the gutter where they belong. But in Washington, you invite your bag men and bag women to restaurants, to cocktail parties, to official functions, to shake hands in public with the politicians they bribe, and then offer them more bribes, even though they are filthy, untrustworthy accessories to crime against the people like anywhere else. Beautiful! To a connoisseur of bribery, this is a beautiful thing.
I understand you've also been studying our banking system.
Yes, and how much we Briberians have to learn. Take the incredible master criminal Jamie Dimon. No surprise he is Greek, for Greece was the number one most corrupt country in the world until Briberia knocked them for a loop off their crumbling pedestal. Like all Greeks, this Dimon is an underhanded scam artist, forger of documents, thief of private property, and robber of widows and orphans. But the scale of his crimes is sensational. Falsifying $1 trillion worth of mortgages? Foreclosing fraudulent on hundreds of thousands of properties, which his bank still owns? Gouging soldiers on active duty on their mortgages? Price-fixing credit card interest rates? Concealing wire and securities fraud in the London Whale? Awe-inspiring! In Briberia, for 1,000th of these crimes, we would coat him with honey and throw him in the bear cage to die a slow, sweet death.
Unless he paid a bribe.
Even in Briberia, there is no bribe big enough to save him. Alas, we are just not that depraved. Yet here, in this magnificently corrupt country, he stays out of jail by paying a bribe to government officials equal to the entire GDP of Briberia. $13 billion! Stupendous! Breathtaking! But it is not a bribe, oh no! It is a penalty! Just like soccer or hockey! Superb! And not a single penny of this penalty comes from his own enormous $400 million net worth! Stunningly, he pays it all from the money deposited in his bank by the million or so morons who entrust a master criminal with their pathetic wages and savings. I worship this man. He has testicles the size of Jupiter.
Well, Dr. Bakshish, thank you. It's rare these days for other countries to praise the American system. As an American, it makes me proud to hear a foreigner for once admiring something we do.
And do so well. Be proud, America. Where you lead, we will always follow.
For the final edition radio hour, Will Durst here with a few choice words about the liberal exodus off the presidential bandwagon, which is approaching clacks on fire drill evacuation levels. Even inside his own party, there seems to be a few questions about Obama's leadership skills, which according to some is similar to saying Paula Deen Apollo theater bookings. It splits up into three camps. The side of the party that's a little to the left of Fidel, who will never be happy until he twitches his nose and world peace and an end to planetary hunger both break out simultaneously. The centrists, who don't understand why everyone is so mad at the president, after all he hasn't done anything. And Joe Biden. But really, it's not Obama's fault. Progressives initially hailed him as one of their own because, well, compared to George W. Bush, Cardinal Richelieu would have seemed progressive. But in truth, Barack was always a middle-of-the-road kind of a guy. A facilitator who brought people together. Of course, the only way to bring the squabbling children inside of today's beltway together is through the use of a wind tunnel, fire hose, and 55-gallon drum of industrial-strength glue. You don't send a constitutional lawyer into the Wrangler National Rodeo Finals and expect them to come out wearing the champion bull rider trophy buckle. But after dithering on Syria and the disastrous Obamacare website rollout, Democrats are falling off his presidential bus faster than milk sours in Mexico. fall off, jumping off. Like Maui sunbathers at a stop sign next to a complimentary sand out of your butt spatula stand. But you can never count this guy out. No matter what you think of Obama's policies, you got to admire his ability not to get involved in them. He himself would tell you he's the opposite of a superhero. A zero hero. Who else could make Joe Biden look presidential? And who knows? Maybe that's the plan. For the Final Edition Radio Hour, I'm Will Durst.
You're listening to the Final Edition Radio Hour. Visit thefinaledition.com every day for more sizzling satire with teeth. It's like Spinal Tap with minds.
Mrs. Jones, Waller, Amos, King, Frederick, Smith, spoiler alert.
Hello, Mrs. Shut the Fuck Up.
Oh, why are you quieting me down with a common epithet? I haven't even established an introductory line of dialogue.
I'm using your surname in salutation. I'm not merely saying shut the fuck up. I'm calling you Mrs. Shut the Fuck Up.
Oh, right. My legal surname is Shut the Fuck Up.
I know. I was simply using it in a friendly conversational manner.
Of course you were. But you don't have to be such a cunt about it.
Anyway, do you want to go with me to see the new Parthen?
No! I don't want one of them big snakes wrapping around my windpipe.
No, Monty Python. They're getting back together, it says here in the prop newspaper.
I don't remember any Monty Python.
Oh, yes, you do. They did comedy.
I don't go in for all that commedia dell'arte. 16th century Italian humor is just a little too anti-humanistic for me. Anyway, I don't want to see 500-year-old people on a stage.
They're not 500 years old. One of them's dead.
Oh, how does he make exits and entrances?
I think he just stays on stage the whole time.
Like Higgs and the real Inspector Hound.
Oh, this is not at all Tom Stoppardian.
Good. I don't want any big concepts flapping around my sensibilities.
Hello, Mum.
It's my son, here to break the dialogue. Hello, son. Son? Son?
I think he's dead.
Oh, you think so?
He's starting to decompose.
Oh, it's not at all attractive.
Your own flesh and blood, dying after one line.
Well, I didn't really like him anyway.
So, do you want to go see the Monty Python reunion?
Might as well. We've certainly ripped them off here, haven't we?
And now it's time for Mrs. Shut the Fuck Up to explode.
The Confession of St. Augustine. November 1993, St. Augustine, Florida. Father Mulcahy checked around the pews the way you had to these days before he drew the curtain of the confessional. The gentle old Spanish-style church seemed tranquil as could be in the late afternoon sun, but the peace was deceptive. Mary the Immaculate was on the edge of the worst part of St. Augustine. He was always rousting drunks or addicts from the back rows of the side altars. Mrs. Gomez had been mugged last week as she was saying the Stations of the Cross, for Christ's sake. What had happened to the old idea of sanctuary? Only one guy out there, older guy, Hispanic-looking but probably harmless, head bent way down in studious devotion, hands pressed together, unclasped, pointing north. That meant someone who got to church once every 10 years. Piety remembered from parochial school. He drew the curtain. It was the rustle and grunt of a heavy man, kneeling opposite him on the other side of the grill.
Bless me, Father, for I have sinned.
Yep. That formula, this one hadn't been in church in a coon's age. Definitely Hispanic, could be Cuban.
It has been many years since I last go to confession. Maybe 30, 35.
When he was younger, a lot younger, Father Mulcahy might have gotten a twinge of pastoral excitement at this announcement, a black sheep returning to the fold. Experience taught him that God-appeasing lifetime confessions were usually the result of bad news from the medic. He waited for the customary lines of adulteries, bad drunks, petty thefts, wife beatings, fights. But there was only silence. The man sighed deeply. Well? Still nothing. What sins do you want to confess, my son? The older ones liked my son, but it didn't help either. The guy was an oil painting. You want to confess sins of the flesh, maybe? Impurities? Women other than your wife?
No. No drink, no drugs, no wife.
Just impurities, then. No wife. Father Mulcahy coughed with distaste. You swing the other way, maybe?
No.
How about stealing? You ever steal anything?
No.
So that's it. Impurities. More silence. Irritation swept over the priest. It was late. He wanted to catch the end of the Marlins game. You're gonna have to give me a little help here, guy. Sweet Jesus, the guy was sobbing. Quietly, but he could see the big shoulders heaving through the grill. My son, God is good. He wants to forgive you. Whatever you want to say, you can say it here.
I killed a man.
Well, well, he'd known it would happen one day. Amazingly, considering the mayhem around him, Father Mulcahy had never heard these words in his confessional. All right, when was this?
Many, many years ago.
Do the police know?
No.
Well, God will forgive you, my son, even this terrible sin. But for me to give you absolution, you have to go to the authorities and tell them also.
I cannot do that.
Well, I know it's difficult, but that's the rules. God knows I'll never tell anyone, but you must.
It was the authorities made me kill a man.
Ah, well, and the line of duty is different. Was this in the military?
No. It was a terrible crime.
The guy was weeping again. Great wrenching sobs. Father Mulcahy was getting alarmed. He was a big fella. Overwrought, for sure. 60 if he was a day. Prime heart attack material. His whole evening could be shot. EMTs, last rites, jeez.
So many years. Hiding. Running. If I go to the authorities, they will kill me.
Okay, my son, calm down. Just try to tell me what happened. We'll see what we can do.
It was many years ago.
Okay, you told me that already.
I stand on a bridge over a highway with a rifle under a tree. I fire a bullet.
At who?
Into the head of the President of the United States.
Father Mulcahy felt like he was in the inside of an elevator in free fall. His brain spun inside his skull. I don't believe you.
It's true. I am the one, the shooter on the overpass, the one they look for all these years.
Tattered White House portrait behind the cash register in Linehan's Bar and Grill flashed before the old priest's eyes. The thick Irish hair, the fierce Irish eyes. Our young president, struck down in the prime of his life. God knows he hadn't seen eye to eye with him on anything except the Bay of Pigs, but he was an Irishman for Christ's sakes. Blood is blood. This fucking beaner. He looked with contempt through the grill at the heaving shoulders. Weeping like a goddamn girl. What about little John John? What about poor little Caroline? What about that beautiful widow? What have you got to cry about, you fucking spick?
Father, forgive me. Give me the absolute, por favor.
Oh, sure. I'll absolve you, you fucking murderer. You go straight to hell, my friend. Father Mulcahy drew the .38 police special his brother Kevin had given him on his deathbed and fired two bullets into the head of the killer of the first Catholic president in U.S. history. Justice had finally been done.
This episode of the Final Edition Radio Hour was performed by Jen Dodd, Barry Lank, John Marshall, Kevin Janis, Jeff Kreisler, and Tony Hendra. It was written by Barry Lank, John Marshall, and Tony Hendra. Special thanks to Will Durst for the 0 Hour commentary, and to Scooter of KPFT in Houston for the piece Filibuster. Get on over to thefinaledition.com for more sizzling satire with teeth. And while you're there, get the details on the Final Edition's first album, The Vinyl Edition, available for your purchase now. The Final Edition Radio Hour was produced by Jeff Chrysler and Tony Hendra, engineered by Melissa Gerson, and edited by Greg Russ. The Final Edition Radio Hour is a production of The Final Edition, LLC, copyright 2013.